Yes, I'm back again for the first time in THI history. Two shows in pretty much one day, or in the space of a day anyway. And after last night's show, and it was last night for the American side, this morning for the European side, we go again with a THI update show. This will be about a two-third show. I just felt it was too long for to not have a THI show for a month, given all that is going on around the world and also within the group as well. So we have another show. This is the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. I am the voice, indeed I am, for this show anyway. And we're going to go ahead with a shortened news, a shortened medical and society, an expose of interest. What else have we got? Some mystery section and some science and some other things as well. And we're going to start off with the news. Brian Thompson, the CEO of United Healthcare, was shot in the chest and later pronounced dead in what appears to be a targeted attack in America. Now, United Healthcare is the largest healthcare company by revenue in the US and is based in Minnetonka, which is in Minnesota. Now, the parent company, United Health Group, was founded in the 1970s. And in 2023, the company's net earnings, which I personally find scandalous, was $22.3 billion. All playing on people's sickness and poor health, most of which they create, let us not forget. But United Healthcare is the largest provider of Medicare health insurance plans in the country also. It also manages health insurances for companies, as well as state-funded and federally funded Medicare, and the company employs around 440,000 people worldwide. So why is this different? Well, one has to ask, is this a sign of the pitchforks time increasing? Now, many Americans have this hero worship and Hollywood-esque version of the US military, born out of programming of a whole nation. Well, this reality should pop that illusion bubble right there. This reality time, and this is what they do to your sons and daughters within the war machine. Duncan Searcy, who joined the US Army in 2017, and he became an Apache pilot for the Utah Army National Guard. And in 2020, he and his unit were deployed in Afghanistan. Shortly after his return, American soldiers were required to take an experimental vaccine against corona. Searcy refused, after which they tried to force and then bribe him. He was even threatened, as he says in a video on Twitter that has gone viral. In April 2022, he had to stay at the base and was not allowed to fly. And Searcy also refused to be tested for corona, after which his salary was withheld. His wife divorced him, and after which he moved into his parents' basement with his two small children. He was disowned by his own unit. So much for fellow camaraderie. Now, after the vaccination requirement was abolished, Searcy could no longer be thrown out of the army because he had not taken the experimental gene therapy. They then tried to fire him for mental health problems. And he says, "My individual situation within the army is only a small symptom of a major disease that affects us all. We are currently ruled by a cabal or ruling class, made up of greedy executives, woke generals, corrupt politicians, and satanic celebrities, he said. They create false flag operations to send your children to other countries to die there for their own gain. They poison our food, water, and medicine for the purpose of population control. They distract us with music, movies, and fashion to rot our brains. They hate us and see us as cattle. Stupid, disgusting, easy to control, but useful, he adds. I'm taking back land and I'm done with it. Now, Cersei calls on all Americans to stand up and take back the country within the bounds of the law, and said there is no political party that is going to save you, since both sides are used by the elite class. Now, the pilot expects terror attacks, mass shootings, and economic collapse after Trump takes office, whom he wants to give a chance. Reality bites, as they say. It bites harder if the illusion lasts longer than it should have done. Sending your children into a unit or organisation as corrupt and as deceitful and also violent and just rampant skullduggery like the US military is not a smart move. It is not being a parent, and it's not being a guardian either. There are other ways to earn employment. And maybe, given I've heard, there is mutiny going on in the ranks. Maybe in 2025, people will down arms. But here is something we never expected to see in the main news. But these times are different. Many alt media over time, including THI, exposed these three companies for high-level theft and corruption. Now it is in the mainstream media. As Texas and 10 other US states have pressed the radioactive antitrust legal button and filed against BlackRock, Black Sun, Vanguard and State Street. Now, the states claim the money managers bought up large stakes in coal companies and then colluded to promote ESG and DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion goals that reduced coal output. Now, the decreased supply of coal in turn increased the cost of electricity to consumers. It was fundamentally anti-competitive behaviour. And these three companies together have $26 trillion of assets under management. That's only $1 trillion smaller than the entire US GDP. Just $1 trillion. And in this case, some of the collusion was hidden in clear view. The three money managers said they were trying to save the world and protect the people. Yeah, right. And they joined groups like the GFANZ and the Net Zero Alliances like Climate Action 100+. But in the end, these three financial giants had collectively acquired close to 30% of most US coal companies. And even though they claim to have good intentions, the 11 state attorney generals argue that any extraneous claims of social benefits are irrelevant, indeed. And that these three companies have profited immensely, while customers have been denied access to a free and open market and have paid higher electricity bills. Now, in a democracy, the people are supposed to decide the policies, not the oligarchs. And for the past 4 years, America's coal producers have been responding not to the price signals of the free market, but to the commands of Larry Fink, BlackRock's chairman and CEO, and his fellow asset managers. But as demand for the electricity Americans needed to heat their homes and power their businesses has gone up, the supply of coal used to generate that electricity has been artificially depressed, and so the price has skyrocketed. Defendants have reaped the rewards of higher returns, higher fees, and also higher profits, while American consumers have paid the price in higher utility bills and also higher costs. Now, Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, turned people's pension funds into his own leftist activist machine. He told them he would maximise their gains, but instead he used their funds to promote his own profits and goals at their expense. And this is an all too familiar story, but in the early 20th century, coal and energy people did exactly the same, cornering the market, stifling innovation, and reaping vast profits, and by and largely attributed to the Jewish elites and the bloodline families. In the early 21st century, these same Jewish elites have done exactly the same. When will people realise what they are doing to us? Is the great question. Well, here's another legal challenge to elite companies in the courts. I guess times they are a-changing. New York Attorney General Letitia James hit two auto insurance companies, including Geico, with a fine topping $11 million over customer data leaks. In an announcement on Monday, James and the New York State Department of Financial Services said some 120,000 New Yorkers had seen their data compromised by the government employees insurance company, Geico. Government employees insurance company. And the Travelers Indemnity Company. Well, isn't it interesting they used a different acronym for Geico? Government employees? Because it used to be General Electric. Now, among the unsecured information was drivers' license numbers, date of birth, and insurance quotes. Geico and Travelers offer drivers protection during times of emergencies, but these companies fail to protect consumers' personal information, according to the Attorney General Letitia James. Data breaches can lead to serious fraud, and that is why it's important for all companies to take cybersecurity and data protection seriously. The great question is, are they actual data breaches or a clever hidden way to sell your data privately? Another article highlighting the financial plight of Americans, whilst Biden, Trump, Harris and the corrupt media tell you everything is great with the economy and also the markets. Because after the inflation of 21 through 2023, as reported by Go Banking Rates this year, nearly half of Americans have less than $500 in savings, and almost 60% of Americans have less than $1,000 saved up. 60% of Americans with less than a month's rent. While useless scripted liars like Rachel Maddow earn $25 million a year for talking shit. Now combine that with the record credit card debt of many of those same people, and there is no other conclusion to be made but that a huge percentage of Americans are living on the margin. Now they voted their dwindling pocketbook over social justice pleas. Prior to government response to COVID, wages had risen under Trump by 7.1%. Adjusting for inflation, they fell under Biden. All making it look like one was better than the other, they are not. It is all an illusion. Now, the last decade, the spending by our state, local and federal governments has reached 35%, according to Trading Economics. It peaked over 40% during the government response to COVID. Further, the cost of regulations imposed by our governments is well over $2 trillion all combined. $2 trillion just for regulations. And if regulations were its own industry, it would trail only government and healthcare in size. And most of that has been spent on Jewish-based programs like wokeism, transgender, transhumanist, only Black Lives Matter, and inviting gangs into the country, it should be noted. But the societal costs of that spending, the taxes imposed to pay for it, and those regulations has been to limit yearly average economic growth to 2% or below. America used to average 4% back in the 1950s. And it has steadily declined since then as government has grown. And 2% growth does not and cannot produce enough private sector jobs for a country the size of the United States, and that is plain and simple. Now, recently, polling by Scott Rasmussen in conjunction with the Committee to Unleash Prosperity found that among the elites defined as people as having at least one postgraduate degree, earning at least $150,000 annually, and living in high population density areas. That 70% of those elites trust the government to do the right thing most of the time, more than twice the national average. Among the politically active members of the elites, the figures rise to a stunning 89%. Interesting, they defined an elite as earning $150,000 a year. And most people will not see themselves as that. And therein lies the problem, a lack of thinking. In the blueprint, I stated no one should earn over $150,000 a year as it's unnecessary. Some disagreed with that figure. But that $150,000 makes you an elite class member. Is that something we should be aspiring to? And what it also proves is, as long as people have money, they just do not care about social injustice, and therein lies the greater problem. Many people joined the alt media around 2007 through 2009. Why? Because of the money crash. And then they suddenly were interested in social justice because they had been pushed the other side of the line. And it is mercenary behaviour. No matter how much you earn or have in your savings, you should always fight for all people. Not just when you are suffering or struggling, as that is service to self only. Now, to end all people going the other side of the line, all people must stand up and fight back. Because most people are only one to two paychecks away from becoming the next victim of being without. And we all long for an ordinary world. Well, have we defined it? What is an ordinary world? Certainly not the greed that was uncovered in the news section. Medical section now. More damaging vaccine exposure. And recently there was a heartbreaking moment when Professor Ian Brighthope broke down in tears in front of thousands of people in Perth, Australia. upon realising that 60 million deadly vaccines had been administered to innocent Australians that is now causing death and also cancer. Now on the transcript there's a YouTube link to that moment. But the global vaccine death rate is 50 million and still counting. And world-renowned professor of medicine, Jayanta Bhattacharya, at Stanford University, in his Great Barrington Declaration, which was signed by nearly 1 million medical experts from all around the globe. And he warned, as infectious disease epidemiologists and public health scientists, we have grave concerns about the damaging physical and mental health impacts of the prevailing COVID-19 policies. Now, the professor, Dr. Bhattacharya, was brutally censored and viciously attacked for telling that truth. But he is the same doctor that President Trump has chosen to head the US National Institutes of Health in order to repair the incalculable damage caused by the demonic Dr. Anthony I Don't Give a Fauci. Now, the Wall Street Journal article titled "The Man Who Fought Fauci and Won." And so we have to question, is this a clever move by Trump or a sinister ploy to control the said doctor? I guess time will tell. Well, here's another program being exposed again. The fake climate change and the misunderstood CO2 emissions. As a new study reveals that plants have been absorbing 31% more CO2 than previously believed. Well, I never. Yes, 31% more. Which is a glaring error that casts serious doubts on climate models, emission scenarios and policy prescriptions like net zero. But net zero is not about climate. It is the plan for our bank accounts, and indeed ourselves in many ways. After all, Schwab said, "You will own nothing and be happy, remember." Now, for years we were told that the science was settled and that urgent action was needed to avoid catastrophic warming. But this discovery suggests that our models have been dramatically underestimating nature's ability to manage CO2. And this revelation not only upends the rationale behind aggressive policies, but also raises broader questions about the supposed certainty of climate science. But the myth of settled science. The phrase "settled science" has been the bedrock of climate advocacy for decades. We've been told that if we don't make rapid, costly changes, we'd face imminent disaster. But settled science means pre-programmed scripts to fit an agenda, as Trust the Science did in COVID. In essence, they are spell customers with their fake science. And skeptics were treated as heretics, while a so-called consensus was portrayed as unquestionable. And yet it turns out they were 31% wrong about something as fundamental as plant CO2 absorption. And this isn't a minor correction, it is a massive revision that undermines the credibility of models driving policy. But the unravelling of the climate models is now unfolding, as climate models are the tools used to predict warming and then guide policy. And they've been treated as scientific scripture, driving policies from emissions reductions to renewable energy mandates. But with a key assumption proven wrong, the model's projections are called into question. The overblown emissions impact. Climate models predict rapid CO2 build-up, assuming limited natural absorption. And yet the plants are swallowing 31%. And this then inflated the urgency of drastic emission cuts. Correcting the higher CO2 absorption rates means that the CO2 accumulates in the atmosphere slower than models predicted, weakening the case for urgent economy-wrenching measures. But it doesn't weaken the case. It shatters the illusion and also the lies. But then we had questionable feedback loops, as many models rely on dramatic feedback loops, such as reduced plant CO2 absorption at higher temperatures, to justify emergency interventions. But this new data shows plants can handle more CO2 than anticipated, making these feedback loops look less inevitable and more speculative. But the policy implications, if the models guide climate policy have been this far off, then the entire framework behind policies like net zero becomes shaky. And policies driven by these models were never proven to be beneficial, but were only assumed to be. Assumed. Now, the discovery that plants are absorbing significantly more CO2 undermines the supposed need for extreme measures. No, it undermines the whole fake program delivered by agencies, militaries, rogue governments and elites. Final piece for this section is a warning to all Jews. I know there are times when we think we should all tar them with the same brush, but this is not the case. They've been used as well. They just recognise it less than we do. But this next thing is a setup, and it will get you all killed. There's no question of that. The Sanhedrin's pronouncement was succinct. So Israeli 365 News interviewed Josh Wander, who had received Shmisha, or ordination from the Sanhedrin, to hear the details and implications of the rabbinic ruling. Rabbinic or satanic? I would suggest it was the latter. But as a precursor, Wander explained that since the Torah was given at Mount Sinai, the Sanhedrin, composed of 71 elders, has been the ultimate judicial authority of the Jewish people. Said who? Where is the proof of such claims? Which Mount Sinai? As there is two, the other is in Romania. All questions people don't ask enough. And it's comparable to the Supreme Court in secular matters. The Sanhedrin also had the ultimate authority on religious issues and met in the temple while it stood in Jerusalem. While many Jews do not recognise the authority of this current Sanhedrin, it is in fact expressly forbidden by Torah law for Jews to accept the authority of a system of law or a legal body that is not based in the Torah. In other words, it is Talmudic law. Now, there have been previous attempts to re-establish the Sanhedrin, and the current Nasi, N-A-S-I, I'm just wondering whether that should be N-A-Z-I, or head of the Sanhedrin is Rabbi Eliyahu Abigail, who served as the head of the rabbinical court in Beersheba and later as the head of the rabbinical court in Jerusalem. Now, one that explained that the Sanhedrin makes this announcement every year, but this year it is of special significance and is garnering more attention than in the past. And it has to do with what's happening worldwide, Wanda explained. But isn't everything that is happening worldwide Jewish related? And he said, Jews worldwide are feeling pressure and are more open to the message. Was it done deliberately? Anti-Semitism has taken on dimensions and forms that have not been seen since before the Holocaust. Taking on dimensions? Interesting terminology there. But the question is, which Holocaust? The Herod one or the Solomon one? Both of which sacrifice children. And Wanda said, my concern is that with the Trump victory, many Jews that are in North America, the majority of Jews, perhaps in the world, are feeling safer, he said. What an indictment of Trump that is. Suggesting quite clearly that Trump operates by Israel first and America second. And Wanda said they are a lot more comfortable with not coming to Israel, he said, with Trump in place. Wanda cited a Jewish source titled the Mesech Chokam, written by Rabia Mia Simica HaKohen in Latvia in the early 20th century. And it was about a decade before Hitler took power. The rabbi wrote that because the Jews are making their Berlin into Jerusalem, God will have to bring a huge storm, which will wipe out Europe. Because they were making Berlin their Jerusalem. And you wonder why the Germans didn't like them. But in comes the fear factor next. The rabbi stated that God does not allow the Jews to feel too comfortable in the exile. In exile? They have no home. They never did. So how can they be in exile? And he said, we've seen in history over and over again that when the Jews get too comfortable in exile, God needs to shake things up in order to make them a little less comfortable. And this is what we are seeing worldwide right now, he said. But it's nothing to do with God making them feel uncomfortable and everything to do with the atrocities they are committing and the world revolting against them. Wanda then provided the solution using fake religion and invisible gods. He said God is making it uncomfortable for the Jews so that they will come home to Israel. Oh dear. Also, they can all be conscripted, sent out to get killed in the military or Mossad, or is it a demographic issue and low Jewish numbers? Or do they just need more slaves to earn them more shekels? This is a complete setup and a deliberate guilt and shame program against the Jewish people. They know what they're doing. Forget religiosity, as that will get you killed also. Forget Armageddon as well. That is another program designed for you to consent for them to kill you. These people are manipulative psychopaths. Do not fall for their games, plots, or devious ploys. Jews like ourselves were always wanted, dead or alive. You see, the elites who are Jewish or go by the name of Jewish just don't care. And that will become even more prevalent next year. An expose of sorts now. And a little bit of a brain or mind ponder with this piece, and it is another piece that is questioning consciousness, and one wonders whether they are trying to convince us all whether we are organic at all. This then, of course, plays into the transhumanist agenda with the adage of we are not conscious. Why would we be against biobot technology? Now, Annika Harris, who is a science writer focusing on neuroscience and physics and the author of Conscious, A Brief Guide to the Fundamental Mystery of the Mind, 2019, challenges us to reflect on two points. One, in a system that we know has conscious experiences, the human brain, what evidence of consciousness can we detect from the outside? And two, is consciousness essential to our behaviour? Well, a reminder from the Santis answers that. The people lost their consciousness and will by command of alien enemies. Now, the editor of the piece notes, introducing an excerpt from the book, but how sure can we be that plants aren't conscious? Well, given the 31% CO2 absorption rate, perhaps people need to think differently. And what if what we take to be their behaviour indicating consciousness can be replicated with no conscious agents involved? And Annika Harris invites us to consider the real possibility that our intuitions about consciousness might be mere illusions. And Harris begins with a shout out to natural selection or survival of the fittest, noting our intuitions have been shaped by natural selection to quickly provide life-saving information, and these evolved institutions can still serve us in modern life. But our guts can deceive us as well, she said, and false intuitions can arise in a number of ways, especially in domains of understanding like science and philosophy that evolution could never have foreseen. And in my opinion, therein lies part of the problem. Why would we access things from the gut? The gut is essentially the body's landfill and filled with millions of bacteria to break the waste down. Does that sound like something we should be listening to? And why at this stage of so-called evolution are more not questioning what they are actually saying? True intuition comes from the heart. It will warn you, but will you listen or take heed? And she said, an intuition is simply the powerful sense that something is true without having an awareness or understanding of the reasons behind this feeling. It may or may not represent something true about the world. And all that depends on your own trust of the self, as too often we have ignored our intuition and paid a heavy price for it. If it's a negative intuition, your cue then is to manifest a change in that negative outcome, and something as simple as I do not consent may suffice. Well, Annika says the problem with the evolutionary approach to thinking is this. If it's true that we can't trust the reasoning skills of our brains, which evolved merely in order to enable us to survive and reproduce, according to the theory anyway, to arrive at a correct answer, we are in no position to evaluate Harris's own thesis as either sound or unconvincing, nor is she in a position to evaluate it herself. Well, I disagree, as that last statement is all very limiting. When we are capable of so much more, when we learn to get out of our own way and trust the self. And to do that, you must shut down the brain aspect and go from the heart. In the section, The Blink of an Eye, she offers a look at locked-in syndrome, which is complete paralysis of the voluntary nervous system muscles, except those that control the eyes. And the most famous example is probably Jean-Dominique Borby, 1952 to 1997, whose 1997 memoir of his post-stroke life, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, was written with about 200,000 blinks. He died 2 days after the publication in 1997. I guess he blinked out. But there was also a film. She also notes anesthesia awareness, where in rare cases patients are aware of events and pain during surgery. And yes, these are rare events where people are conscious, but we don't know it. But the patient knows it all too well, sadly. So how can you even begin to question it? And then the question raised, but how do we generally notice consciousness in other human beings by their conscious interactions with us in situations where no other explanation seems plausible? In social situations, sudden unconsciousness in a human is likely to result in calls to 911. Human consciousness remains mysterious, but it is not ambiguous. And if Harris wants to introduce the idea that plants are conscious, the editor said, efforts to denigrate the significance of human consciousness are simply not the best place to begin with. And I agree. The point is, all living organic beings are of consciousness. The soulless are not of consciousness. Only a program resembling it. That is the big difference. But in the section On Firmer Ground, she's on firmer ground when she observes that plants have been found in recent research to do many things that animals do. She cites plant geneticist Daniel Chamovitz, whose book What a Plant Knows was a field guide to the senses, which describes plant responses to touch, light and heat, etc. And plants can sense their environments through touch and can detect many aspects of their surroundings, including temperature, by other modes. And it's actually quite common for plants to react to touch. A vine will increase its rate and direction of growth when it senses an object nearby that it can wrap itself around. And the infamous Venus flytrap can distinguish between heavy rain or strong gusts of wind, which do not cause its blades to close, and the tentative incursions of a nutritious beetle or frog, which will make them snap shut in 1/10 of a second. Now, the electrical signals that stimulate nerve cells in plants are similar to those in animals, and the genes that enable the plant to determine light or darkness are the ones humans use too. And one might add to the list the fact that plants use glutamate to speed signal transmission, a technique also used by mammals. So why are plants like humans, animals or mammals? Because they have been them in the past in a different lifetime. Science won't discuss that too much. You get all the obvious answers when you expand your thinking. In other words, given the physics and chemistry of our universe, a finite number of efficient communication systems is available. A variety of different life forms may be found using them, and those life forms may share nothing beyond the need to adopt one of the available systems. But plant communication can be quite complex as well, as Suzanne Simard has shown. And she was studying the levels of carbon in two species of tree, a Douglas fir and a paper birch, when she discovered that the two species were engaged in a lively two-way conversation. Oops. In the summer months, when the fir needs more carbon, the birch sent more carbon to the fir. At other times, when the fir was still growing, but the birch needed more carbon because it was leafless, the fir sent more carbon to the birch, revealing that the two species were in fact interdependent. Equally surprising were the results of further research led by Simard in the Canadian National Forest, showing that the Douglas fir mother trees were able to distinguish between their own kin and a neighbouring stranger's seedlings. Simard found that the mother trees colonised their kin with the bigger mycorrhizal networks, sending them more carbon below the ground. The mother trees also reduced their own root competition to make room for their kids, and then, when injured or dying, sent messages through carbon and other defence signals to their kin seedlings, increasing the seedlings' resistance to local environment stresses. And likewise, by spreading toxins through underground fungal networks, plants are also able to ravage threatening species. And because of the vast interconnections and functions of these mycorrhizal networks, they have been referred to as the Earth's natural internet. Plants communicating, working together in a structured, cohesive flow. The question is, why can't humans do the same? Now, evaluating plant interactions, it's possible that plant interactions are as complex as those of social insects, but that does not in itself establish consciousness, according to the author anyway. Ants, for example, might be best understood as thinking like computers, which implies efficacy but not consciousness. And Harris acknowledges that fact by saying, still, we can easily imagine plants exhibiting the behaviours described above without there being something it is like to be a plant. And so complex behaviour doesn't necessarily shed light on whether a system is conscious or not, really. But then in pursuit of plant consciousness, she cites artificial versus human intelligence. The problem is that both conscious and non-conscious states seem to be compatible with any behaviour, even those associated with emotion, so the behaviour itself doesn't necessarily signal the presence of consciousness. Okay, but those with higher levels of consciousness are almost always those more in control of their emotions, I have found personally. But she said, no, wait, with AI, we humans are insiders. We invented AI. We know how it's done. No one is sure what human consciousness even is, but we are pretty sure what computers are and do. See the slide to the transhumanist program of making us doubt ourselves? And she said, even at their best, chatbots, to take one example, are simply scarfing up and reprocessing what humans say on the internet. AI could only be conscious if somehow consciousness arises naturally from a large-scale computations. We do not at present have a reason to believe that it does. But why the doubt or hedging their bets, saying that it is possible? It isn't possible. Computers do not have thought or connection to source, so there is no consciousness involved. Organic equals consciousness, inorganic equals a code, a copy of a copy that might appear like consciousness, but it's not and never will be. No matter how much scientists try to get you to believe it. The next section was the philosopher's zombie. She then brings up the philosopher's zombie, the zombie that might act exactly like a close friend but has no consciousness. And she said, let's say your zombie friend witnesses a car accident, looks appropriately concerned and takes out his phone to call for an ambulance. Could he possibly be going through these emotions or motions without an experience of anxiety and concern? Or is it a conscious thought process that leads him to make a call and describe what happened? Or could this all take place even if he were a robot without a felt experience prompting the behaviour at all? Again, ask yourself what, if anything, would constitute conclusive evidence of consciousness in another person. And it might be a valid scientific question, but science is not always relevant or understanding of life itself. That is where, in my opinion, science falls short. And dare I say it, a robotic approach to life and understanding, when applied, and emotions plus unbiased observations reveals so much more. That's the difference, you see. They keep asking these doubtful questions when it's captain obvious to people who understand life itself. And the constant references to computer-like and robotic approach to life, it's all spellcasting. Now, Annika discovered that the zombie thought experiment is also capable of influencing our thinking beyond its intended function in the following way. Once we imagine human behaviour around us existing without consciousness, that behaviour begins to look more like many behaviours we see in the natural world. We've always assumed we're non-conscious, such as the obstacle-avoiding behaviour of a starfish, which has no central nervous system. In other words, when we trick ourselves into imagining a person who lacks consciousness, then we can begin to wonder if we're in fact tricking ourselves all the time when we deem other living systems, like climbing ivy or stinging sea anemones, to be without it. We have a deeply ingrained intuition and therefore a strongly held belief that systems act like us are conscious and those that don't are not. And in my opinion, that is overcomplicating things. It is simple. Organic living beings are conscious. Inorganic creations are not conscious or exhibit consciousness. And also, once you have an understanding, trust and knowing of the self, why would you be concerned of whether other living beings have consciousness or not? And what it reveals is people's lack of knowledge. This is our greatest problem. But what the zombie thought experiment makes vivid to Annika is that the conclusion we draw from this intuition has no real foundation. Like a 3D image, it collapses the moment we take our glasses off. But intuition in its base form is also consciousness. Why? Because it is a thought pattern, and those thoughts then create reality. And then she says, again, wait, every human being knows about human consciousness in the first person, but not one of us can ever be absolutely sure that another human being is conscious. Our minds are, perhaps by design, accessible to others only by what we say and do. And that is a correct question or statement, but not in the way it is portrayed. The reason being is we assume all people are human beings. But unbiased, non-preconceived observations reveal a different story altogether. Just because people look like human beings does not mean they are. And when you add that into the mix, then a whole different subset of understanding takes place. The same applies to the religious book. And she said, yes, the consciousness of others could be an illusion, but then the whole universe around us could be an illusion in theory. We assume conscious human behaviour in other human beings when they behave like conscious human beings. And that makes sense, she says, because the alternative, that you are the only conscious one, requires a much greater stretch of belief. Well, that thinking would be just pure ego and a non-understanding aspect to life, in my opinion. As for the climbing ivy and stinging sea creatures, we don't think they are conscious because nothing in their behaviour prompts us such an interpretation. It's not a matter of intuition or prejudice. We are just not seeing evidence. Which again is fair enough from a scientific point of view, but you cannot see the evidence of air, oxygen, frequency, waves, or the greatest false belief structure, the God and the characters of the Bible. There is no evidence any of them existed in the written format, yet people believe. And if only science people and scholars took an overview perspective of religion, instead of questioning consciousness, imagine the leaps humanity could make. Now, predictably, for these science people, a comparison was made with chimpanzees, all to fill the Darwinism bullshit. And Harris's argument here is similar to the one we encounter in claims that chimpanzees think like humans. If they do, why don't we see anything like a human culture growing up amongst them? Just occasional flashes of intelligent behaviour. And the article said Harris would do well to stick to the point that plant behaviour is turning out to be as complex as animal behaviour. The question of consciousness is a separate one, and there's no reason or need to assume that plants are conscious. And again, therein lies the problem and the lack of understanding of life with statements like that. Plants are living things, and so they are conscious. Perhaps also with more intelligence than some scientists. And they said, you may wish to read Do Ants Think? Yes, they do. But they think like computers. Computer programmers have adapted some ant problem solving methods to software programs, but without the need for complex chemical sense. Navigation expert Eric Cassell points out that the algorithms have made the ant one of the most successful insects ever, both in numbers and complexity. But their behaviour is based upon the genetics of their much taller ancestors, who built many of the technology systems by copying the human species. The old AI system was built by the spider race to create a hive mind network. Hence the copy of the copy wished to make man in their image. A hive-minded organism of compliance. Before we go into the next piece, there's quite a theme to this morning's show. Even what's gone before, the plant CO2 absorption rate, proven scientists wrong. And also the last piece, questioning of consciousness again and trying to convince us that we're all computers and have none and we don't have sound minds so they can manage us, etc., etc. But this next section, we have a science section and a mystery section next, also dances into the role science does of perverting life, knowledge and reality. And maybe in the coming year, we will see more of that. Scientists have discovered a ridiculous, simple way to remove almost 90% of microplastics from water. How did they do that? They just boiled it. Well, there's actually a little bit more to it than that. So don't go boiling your water thinking that alone will cure all plastic ails. But that's the key finding from a promising study published in Environmental Science and Technology Letters. The study showed boiling and then crucially filtering water as a dual process got rid of up to nearly 90% of tiny plastic particles, which the authors write can be found in 129 of 159 tap water samples from 14 countries worldwide. Microplastics are pieces of plastic less than 5 millimetres long, the size of a pencil eraser, and are often much smaller. And they come from larger plastics that degrade but don't break down, and have been found high on Mount Everest even, in the depths of the ocean and also in Antarctica. Now the potential harm of microplastics in drinking water is supposedly unknown, though researchers have found that the pollutants can break the blood-brain barrier in mice and cause dementia-like behaviour. How is it they can study things related to mice and not humans? It's funny that. And why don't we have we've got all these fancy filters and ozonators. Why don't we have something on the water pipes that boils the water before it comes out the tap? Common sense again. But one main concern to date has been the ubiquity of microplastics in shellfish that are consumed by humans. The toxins have, however, caused allergic reactions and death in human cells in laboratory tests. And researchers spiked tap water with polystyrene spheres and microplastics from a degraded polythene bag and polypropylene mask. They boiled the water for 5 minutes and cooled it for 10 minutes before taking samples. Now at high enough temperatures, calcium carbonate, which is commonly found in tap water, will become solid, effectively encapsulating or encrusting the plastic particles and making them easy to remove through a simple filter, such as a coffee filter or even a water filter. Now, the tactic worked especially well with hard water, and results showed 95%, 81% and 90% effectiveness in removing polystyrene, polyethylene and polypropylene. Now, the scientists didn't exactly trumpet their discovery, saying they wanted to stimulate more studies. Stimulate more studies before making a decision. Yes, as it depends upon what their paymasters allow them to reveal. Still, they noted that it's easy to boil water and the practice also kills microbes, parasites and viruses. And this wasn't the first effort to tackle the microplastics in water problem. A sawdust and tanning filter removed 95.2 to 99.9 of microplastics. And plants extract also provide effective treatment. There's the plant again. Another concept is a powder additive that can remove microplastics 1,000 times smaller than those detectable by wastewater treatment plants. One observer was hopeful the study would mark a step forward for a plastic-free future. Are we going to be able to vacuum up every piece of plastic that's on Earth already now? No, said Chris Reddy, a senior scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. But I do think we can make meaningful broad-scale change in how plastic is potentially impacting our present. And indeed, and it can all be solved if the elites and their shekel-based conglomerates moved out of the way. The mystery section. You better get your thinking caps on. Upon a deep pondering about life on and around Earth, plus mental plane travelling, I came to a startling conclusion, all based upon observation only, that there are no straight lines in nature. And straight lines are inorganic life and living, designed to create traps and distort nature and also the universe itself. In other words, creating a fake reality. And this is why we have so many lines and defined patterns like triangles, squares, circles, hexagons, pentagrams, torus, Mobius loops on this planet currently. They are all inorganic shapes and all are closed systems. Nature does not create them shapes. It creates waves, spirals, snowflake patterns, all of which have open-ended patterns that allow for expansion and evolution, all of which are organic. Just like the blueprint, Flower of Life. Now, I'm not sure whether our science whizmaster, Michael Blaha, will agree to this, but this shows about opinions. And sometimes we can disagree on things, and that is okay. But my main concern now, again, is based on observational mental travel and the trap set by the dark forces brought me to the conclusion that the cube is a trap for all living beings. And one of the main science cubes is the tesseract. So I delved into that and came up with this description. The tesseract is also called an 8-cell, C8, regular octachoron, or cubic prism. the figure eight again, like the Möbius loop. And a tesseract is bounded by eight three-dimensional hyperplanes. It is bounded, which means trapped by eight. Now, the term derives from the Greek tessera, meaning four, and actis, meaning ray. A ray, but what type of ray? A laser ray? Well, laser is another straight line from visual perception, but it is actually curved. The definition laser, a beam of light, light emitted in a given direction from a luminous body, early 14th century. A beam of light from a luminous body brings up interesting connotations as that is describing the sun. Ray, from Old French ray, nominative rays, meaning ray of the sun. Spoke of a wheel, which is the Rus swastika solar sign. Gush or spurt, from the Latin radius, ray, spoke, staff, rod. See radius, not common before the 17th century. Which is also very interesting, describing a ray and a radius as a staff, rod or bar that, as mentioned earlier, fires laser rays. Because what that is describing is the star maker and star breaker staff or rod that was in the hands of the Draco until 2014. Now it's safe and secured, so it cannot be used again by warring races. But that rod or staff had sufficient power to create suns and also destroy suns as well, and the Draco used it more for deleting whole solar systems. But the Oxford English Dictionary says ray is of the sun, usually in reference to heat, beam being preferred for light. And ray is usually distinguished from beam as indicating a smaller amount of light. In scientific use, a beam is a collection of parallel rays. Now, in ordinary language, ray is the word usually employed when the reference is to the heat rather than the light of the sun. But science fiction ray gun is recorded by 1931 in Amazing Stories. An electric ray gun as an imaginary weapon is from 1924, and death ray gun from 1926 as a prop in a vaudeville act, which was a comedy farce with music. But the Martians had a heat ray weapon in the series War of the Worlds in 1898. So why is that significant? Because when you use the thought pattern of you cannot imagine something that doesn't already exist, then they knew of Martians and heat ray weapons in the 1800s. But in the light of a cube is a trap. Can you see where I'm going with this? And so I asked both Kevin and Michael, probably about a month ago now, and Kevin's response was, in that exercise, circling the square or squaring the circle, the original figure is a circle perfectly inside a square or sphere, perfectly inside a cube. And he suggested that Source is in the process of doing something that is upgrading to a new format of matter, a new state of energy, resonance represented by the square being perfectly inside the circle, the cube perfectly inside the sphere. And this figure that will result when you find a circumference that is the same length as the square, because the circle is inherently always shorter than the perimeter, because circles or spheres are more efficient and the resonance upgrade source wants. Now, to use spheres, not cubes, or more specifically, the energy resonance represented by spheres, and to phase out the energy resonance represented by cubes. And he said, part 6 discusses this project source has embarked upon. It's all there in the Santees. Now, I had chimed in again on this ponder, but then later Robert Kinnegan chimed in, and so we will go with what he said first. And he said something from Kevin's presentation where he spoke of a circle versus a square as efficiency of coverage, the key term being efficiency, thus energy flow. And that dot connected with the checkerboard pattern so prevalent in the Dark Ways, now more so than the Freemasons, including the scrambling or checkerboarding of DNA. But also a square fits fine in 2D, but less so in 3D without distortion or screwball math. Scalable 2D pattern of squares within squares would be the maximum harvest and configuration and pull dupe beings into belief of duality or 2D. Then everything fits in their world, but not our reality. And his pondering is, if the checkerboard pattern is introduced and overlaid to facilitate the least efficient energy flow of the natural energies, and probably a plethora of other negative consequences not apparent immediately 2D. And he's also said, not sure if that touches on Solomon's seal or other DNA overlay manipulations of whatever nomenclature. A scrambling would severely impair the DNA's ability to organize itself into its next evolutionary phase. Trauma of scattering puzzle pieces and correct connections effectively. The inefficiencies of energies are dams for harvesting and bleed us of our life force energy, while keeping us collectively in the harvestable state or condition. All interesting stuff, and perhaps a short piece I did this year adds to what has just been said. And I said, what that means is your view, understanding and perception of the world and everything is formed by something or someone else. All created by 2D images, eye majors, mirror magic and supposition. A book, a picture or a movie are all 2D images that we have accepted as our reality in a supposed 3D world. Assumption, like logic, is not fact. It is the predisposed positions of other people. And predisposed means putting someone in a frame of mind to be willing to do or accept something. Pre means before, then dispose. So before they dispose of you, they will get you in a frame of mind to then be willing or accept your fate. You do realize that. But will you use your real eyes and come to the same conclusion? Is that they have been imposing upon us a 2D world and reality? And it's the ultimate in mind memes, the perfect form of subtle devolution, all done by accepting their views and opinions of your world. In essence, they have manufactured and overlaid the world of how they wish you to see it. And what is worse is, we went along with it. Now, my ponderings went deeper as I've had a load of observations and experiences suggest everything should be a sphere. Never on my travels during the dream and daytime have I ever experienced any straight lines, except the cube, one of which was removed from the front of our sun back in 2013. And the mainstream media and the science community announced around a decade ago that astronomers had detected a Dyson sphere around a sun, but it was not a sphere they presented, it was a cube. And so here is a description of a Dyson sphere, which is actually a square or cube overlaying the sphere, which is the sun. A Dyson sphere is a hypothetical megastructure that encompasses a star and captures a large percentage of its power output. The concept is a thought experiment that attempts to imagine how a spacefaring civilization would meet its energy requirements once those requirements exceed what can be generated from the home planet's resources alone. And because only a tiny fraction of a star's energy emissions reaches the surface of any orbiting planet, actually a spiraling planet, building structures encircling a star would enable a civilization to harvest more energy. Now, most people at this point will think, how can you possibly build something around the sun? Replicator technology. Now, the first modern imagining of such a structure was by Olaf Stapledon in his science fiction novel called Star Maker. A science fiction novel that just happened to be called Star Maker, just like what the Draco had. Funny that. Now, the comment or concept was later explored by the physicist Freeman Dyson in his 1960 paper, Search for the Artificial Stellar Sources of Infrared Radiation. And Dyson speculated that such structures would be the logical consequence of the escalating energy needs of a technological civilization and would be a necessity for its long-term survival. Now, Kevin then mentioned it could be related to a dimension, but I disagreed with that, as a dimension is just a different frequency. But I asked, what generates the frequency within the cube? Because everything you see in space is a variant of a sphere, even universes which look like a soap bubble. So I knew it only applied to this dimension. So I began to look at earthly-based words. The first up was the word geometry, as this is heavily used in the science and astronomy circles. Geo means earth, and metri means art, process, or science of measuring. Earth, art, process, or measuring. And what that means or equals is an earth-only process. So how does that translate to the cosmos or the universe? The answer I found doesn't. Where in nature does it show straight lines? It doesn't. So what are the straight lines? They are pixels of the digital world. Pixels of the digital world. A toroidal vortex gives the impression of straight lines, but the side walls of it are only drawn to show the path of the energy spiralling down or up. And as an example, a laser beam projects a straight line, but a non-visible viewpoint, you know that line is a wave, and so it's not a straight line. What is created is a straight line because they have programmed us with 2D thinking. You cannot have a straight line when everything is in wave form. Waves are not straight lines. Now, I was shown some of this in a download in 2013, which I had to decode before gaining a greater understanding. And that was part of the presentation I did on the Common Sense Zoom in January 2023 and also in Ireland in 2022 and 2023. And one also has to think of the heliocentric solar system model I presented in those presentations. No straight lines, only spiraling waves. That as it propels forward, it has a space between each spiraling arm. Is this why their math is wrong? Now, upon working some mathematical stuff out, I realised it was all hidden in plain sight by another term they use. They use the square root, or is it the root of the square, which becomes the cube? Is the sphere root divided by the 9, which would make sense? Now, the overview of this is the cube is a 2D non-source-based trap and harvesting system overlaying the organic creation. All straight lines are created by man or beings, hence the US street grid pattern formation. A grid connects everyone like a network, traps everyone inside, and condenses the dark, low-vibrational cloud overpopulated cities and towns. A grid is also the entrance to the sewer. Is that symbolic? Source nor nature created straight lines. That is the 2D illusion game. Only spheres and or spirals were created by source, which is organic and true to nature. If you are thinking, well, a tree is a straight line, so that disproves the theory. But the tree is a series of spirals and spheres, or rings, that gave it its shape. Recently, we mentioned the game of snooker, that it is played with a cue ball. But perhaps what it really means is, it is a cube ball, a trap that cubes us all. In other words, we were snookered. And in the light of these cubes, now in the day of the Svarog, perhaps this song is appropriate. Seems you all like that last piece. And we've had lots of powerful pieces this year. And occasionally we have to do some pieces that are not pleasant on the ear. But it is what it is. But an update from the final section of today's show, an update from the web team on uploading images to the B Forum posts or albums and their image size quality when being saved from and downloaded from the B Forum. But when bringing up the image which was previously uploaded to the B Forum, there are two options to save the image. One, right click on the image and save image as, and this saves a lower quality of the image. But two, if using the download option from the three dots, this downloads the original quality of the image. Now, something I have to address regarding the group is to why all of a sudden several members are all asking for clarification when everyone has already had it. And it seemed to be permeating through all the groups currently, and is that suggestive of a lack of focus? No clarity for the blueprint teams was one of the issues. But another issue arose that I have addressed multiple times and yet it never seems to sink in. The issue of Eucadia. I have addressed this with Roger multiple times also and he is clear on the subject. And yes, I do hear there is many alarming issues surrounding contracts and bindings deeper within the Eucadia material. But that is not what THI endorsed. We have used portions of Eucadia, not the whole script. And the relevant portion of Eucadia is in the blueprint. All the rest has no current value to THI or the blueprint. Now it may well have or play some role in future use, but not for the now. There has been issues within the blueprint which was touched upon lightly in the end of year review part 2, but was not appropriate to go further into that show as it would have deflected the great work that had been done throughout the year. But my observations over the year, while several indiscretions, poor planning, poor communications of people not staying in the lane, people refusing to do the work they volunteered for, and also a general malaise around something that should have been important to everyone. I've witnessed and felt the tensions, the frustrations and the discord within the groups, despite several attempts to try to diffuse it or refocus people. I've watched members struggle with the frustration of people playing games, mind games, people asking for clarity like we only started the blueprint a few weeks ago, some egos running amok, people hiding and members' health affected due to all the stress and frustration. And so I could not sit by and ignore all that, and actions had to be taken. A new system was set up recently to help the few who are involved, but even that was not applied properly, as people came in straight away trying to change it, again not wanting to go with the structure, and then people deciding to not post the memes that the media team had worked so hard to create in a short space of time. And it's very disrespectful to the few people who did the work. We had leaders who didn't lead or didn't turn up, and yes, that is not right. But were we not all members designed as leaders? And what that tells me is people just want to do their own things and not work in a structure. Not only that, but people do not want the blueprint to succeed if it involves them A, having to do something, or B, having to take personal responsibility for it. But I've also had to witness certain members blocking contacts made to the group or myself that was completely disrespectful to all who worked on the blueprint. But last week I also found out another email issue, as dozens applying to join the TPC and all communal gatherings were completely ignored. At best, that is incompetence. At worst, it suggests the possibility that some members were deliberately blocking the group expanding or moving forward. Now, I often hear the cries and pleas of "I have no life" due to THI, or their personal or group moans and complaints. But I wonder how many stop and think of how I feel or felt watching some people act no better than the masses, when you've all been given the tools to be and act as better people. The disappointment is, it was closer to me in the village. So much for gratitude. But it is what it is. And in general terms, there doesn't seem to be enough push from the members to continue the blueprint teams, the format and shows anymore. Which is okay, as that is the will of the people. But given the number of people stepping back, some removed for attempting to destroy the work and the groups, some unwilling to follow the structure, plus people being more interested in the THI side of the show, there'll be no more blueprint shows following the last one on November the 21st and episode 35. Is it fitting and or indicative in some way that it ended on an 8 show, signifying the loop and the old and more familiar way is better of do nothing and wait for another saviour programme? Now, some may find disappointment in that, some may be angry, but they are part of the few who did the bulk of the work. And to them, that is not a reflection of your work, and so please take solace in that. But given the importance of what we were doing, one wonders where the Guardian aspect of it was. Guardian went to Gordian, a knot of hampering, suppressing, avoiding, bickering, excuses and not doing. And the majority of our members, when you add all the numbers up of MeWe and Facebook, chose not to engage in the blueprint, which is indicative of a general malaise in society. And with the decline of the groups, people choosing or ignoring the new format, people leaving or stepping back, the few doing were being put under more unnecessary stress and duress. It was a time to call it a day on the group nature of the blueprint. It was all too much in terms of drama, shenanigans, reluctance, and it was affecting members' well-being and health. Again, how many stop to think how I would feel watching all that unfold? And so there will be no more organised meetings for media, research, activist groups. The Blueprint Action meetings will be cancelled, and the B Forum will likely be repurposed. And this will give people their life back, no longer tied into several meetings and or workloads to manage and juggle. The website of the Law and the Guardian Group will remain as a testament of the work completed. The youth website may have a new purpose next year in one of several opportunities that will be coming up in the new year. The indexing and categories will continue in the structure put forward, and the media team will continue with the four-cycle posting should they wish to do so. Gardening and merchandise, just as they were, and the book team also. The Canadian and European blueprint teams can carry on as you were also, as it is important they are delivered. Now, there are other stages of the blueprint, but that depends on you all playing a part in promoting it further. It's all down to you all now, how the blueprint continues or doesn't per se. And by that I mean there will be no structure outside of the assignment team, which will continue to push the blueprint on all fronts. And so you are free to do as little or as much as you wish now, promote it privately or not. Now, in life, to succeed, thrive, develop, learn, love and be happy all require a greater portion of your energy to make those basic human traits possible. And sadly, too many will not put their energies in pursuing those goals and prefer to sit and wait for the saviour and some new programme to attach to, all of which decides your fate for you. There is no triality aspect in that path or life choice. And so ultimately the song, the movie, the play and the stage all remain the same. I will not be mourning its loss. I will, as always, be focused on the future, a very different future based upon choices from the past. We had a great journey with the Blueprint for 2.5 years and delivered something truly special. Thanks to all who took part and to the few who wish to continue the Blueprint journey in a smaller format, let's ride the Blueprint train together in 2025. I have a feeling things are about to get real interesting on many levels. The assignment team will carry on in the mystery way, the mystery path, and maybe even the school that some chose to reject it as it was clearly deemed not important enough. And again, that is okay with me, as people exercised their free will choice and they chose accordingly. Thanks for all those who put a great deal of effort into the Blueprint to get it where it is today. It was a memorable experience for the most part and a useful experiment to see where everyone is at. We go forward into 25 with a renewed hope that certain things will unfold the way it was all intended. I said it would only be the few, and that is what has unfolded. Well, that wraps up another exciting year of THI shows, our final show this year, and what an extraordinary year it has been. Our next show will be the end of year review part 3 on January 7th, and before that you will see me next on Sunday, January 5th, for the December Common Sense Zoom. I'm looking forward to that. So I'm left to wish you all a happy new year and hope your wishes for next year unfold as you wish, as the 8 year closes and the 9 year is about to begin with a renewed hope. As for me personally, I'm excited for the next phase of life, love, journey and developments. Life has always thrown hurdles or waves at me. I just rise and keep on skimming them in my own unique way. This has been the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. Bye for now. Final thought for next year. Learn to think, be and act better as people than you did this year. Good night.